Committee of the Whole meeting, February 19th, 2000.
Committee of the Whole order at 7:13. Roll call.
Trustee Clemens.
Present.
Trustee Newby.
Present.
Trustee Sandoval.
Here.
Trustee Simoncelli.
Present.
Trustee Tripman.
Present.
Trustee Wyszynski.
Present.
Okay. Item 2.1, approval of the minutes of the Committee of the Whole meeting, February 4th, 2013. Second. Tripon, second by Newby. Questions or comments? Roll call.
Trustee Newby?
Aye.
Trustee Sandoval?
Yes.
Trustee Tannenfeld?
Aye.
Trustee Tripon?
Aye.
Trustee Wyszynski?
Aye.
Trustee Clemens?
Aye.
Public comment for Committee of the Whole. Okay, Community Development and Salt Co. O&M fee increase discussion.
Negotiating the host agreement that is going to have more revenue. I personally don't think that anybody should be voting on an increase while they're voting to accept more revenue. I think we should be asking for that to be used first.
Can you speak up a little bit?
I'm sorry.
My question is, I know we requested the budget last time, and I see that some of the pages are provided, but it looks like we're missing the first page that has probably the salaries. If you look at the items that the subprogrammers don't add up, whereas on the other pages they do. Anything about $399,000 worth of items. I don't know if that's if they omitted that and sending it to us, or if it has missed it.
I have page one through seven on the budget, so
you have page two?
I don't think it's one that's on the right. You don't have double sided packets? All right, double sided.
No.
The green story?
Okay.
Is that under the memo of the executive
committee? Yeah, it's the first one. So it has to be
This one's not double sided.
Thank you.
Electronic version is double sided. Somebody just wants to get it down.
Make a decision for electronic delivery.
Yeah, that's our strategy. You take it. Right on the website.
While we're waiting, do we want to cover some other subjects? We want to go to police, seeing Kurt went down and copies, so he's not here for the engineering report. Right, then we'll go to police and in-car video system and the ballistic shield purchase.
Mr. Mayor, I think members of the board, the first agenda item summary is for the purchase of in-spot car cameras and associated software. A little bit of history with this project. The current cameras that we use in the cars, we have three that are failing, and we've been nursing them a while, and now a fourth one is starting to fail. The problem that we have, and we have anticipated, is this is a budgeted item. The company's out of business. We can't get them to help us with software updates or corrections, and we can't get them for parts. We've taken other cameras apart and nursed them along, but they're at the point now where they just don't work. We have three that have failed now. We've talked to vendors, and the vendors that we talked to specifically are Digital Ally, Enforcement Video, and Custom Signals. Digital Ally will sell us, and we look for what we have now, nothing more, nothing less. Digital Ally will sell us a comparable camera and the software for $2,895 each camera. The rear seat microphone in this one is separate for $40. The software that would be a one-time purchase for these is $1,990. For a total for the three cameras and software, $10,915. Enforcement Video is the state bid price. Their comparable camera system is $4,782 each. The rear seat microphone is included, the software is included, and their price for three cameras is $14,346. Custom Signals for their camera is $5,035 each. And they do not sell just a rear microphone. They sell a camera with a microphone. That's $325 more. And then the software is $474 for a total of $16,554 for three cameras. So we budgeted $12,000 this year for this item. We're asking for approval to purchase three cameras this year from Digital Ally at $10,915.
People,
will
be
in
that fourth one later this year?
We'll be about 16 of them when we're done.
Okay.
Digital Ally's been around for quite some time. They're a reliable system. Right now, the most price on the market we could find.
Did they cut you any break because you buy more?
They did.
Oh,
yeah. And we talked with them about that, and that we're not done.
The software is a one item, not for each, and that gives us the capability for the downloading, as I understand.
How long are updates? The updates are, I asked that question specifically, we will not have to pay for any software updates.
And that our company's company may be stable and will be around?
Yes, they just built a new building in Oldington, Kansas, just outside of Kansas City. They have representatives in that area. I know that they've been in business at least, I should say, I believe that I know that they've been in business at least.
One comment was, we've got a fourth one failing. It's still operable.
Yeah, with the parts on the other one, we should be able to nurse.
Okay, and then next year's budget, we would have additional purchases then?
We're not probably paying, we're asking for some public funds.
Okay.
And we probably will for the next 2 years.
All right, I think like everybody's good with that, moving that forward?
Yep.
Okay.
The next one. Agenda item submitting Mr. Mayor, members of the board, is for the purchase of two replacement ballistic shields. These are Kevlar shields that officers carry in squad cars on every ship every day. And the ones that we currently have were manufactured in 2004-2007. They generally have a 5-year lifespan. If you saw them, I would not believe that the ones that we have right now would stop the bullets that they're meant to stop. The bottom of one of them is frayed, and officers still take them out in case they ever have to need them or use them. But they failed a long time. We're asking to replace them. We did some price searching for those. And the price that Gall's, these are all comparable to actually the same shield. Gall's would charge us $1,200 each. Their shipping is free for a total of $2,400 for two of them. Atlantic Tactical would charge us $1,183.95 and shipping is $20 each for a total of $2,407.90. Strikers would charge us $1,399 free shipping for a total of $2,799.98. We're asking for approval. We have budgeted $2,400 for this purchase this year. We're asking for permission to purchase those shields from Paul's with $2,400 for two of them. We tried to do our best to get them down. This is a tight market, but that's why I attached the memo to the emails so that you can see that we did have those conversations. We were able to get them down as much as they were going to go.
Can you talk to this firm? We have exactly two, or we have?
We only have two, and that's really all that we need.
That's okay. I wanted to see if this was something we need to kind of watch for. What happened with five-year expiration? 2004
and 2007. Now on
our officers' statement
head coach. Okay, everybody okay moving that forward?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're trying to figure that out. I actually made a call to Walter today, and from the cone menu, I believe there were five, there's possibly six employees, but we know for sure five are full-time employees.
Five or six.
Sue, do you know for sure?
I don't know exactly, but I think it is five, maybe six.
January 24th memo, the last page of what we were just given, there's recommendations, FALCO staff and executive committee recommend approval of the increase in the fee, go through their analysis of the budget, and then the back page has a recap of suggested budget cuts if the increase will not be approved. I guess it looks like there's about $49,300 shortfall. Actually, it's in the budget, and there's about another $2,500, so it's about $52,000 shortfall from the budget without the increase. So you made a comment about potential additional host fees coming in. It's based on if the group facility would be built.
In addition to that, Walter said that, and he said this during the meeting, there are ways to cut this budget and to make this happen without the increase. And of course, as soon as he said that, a lot of people were like, then why aren't we doing that? So from the feeling at the time of the meeting, I did not get the impression that they were going to do an increase out of the villages, but more so looking at that cut.
Okay.
At least that was the atmosphere at the time.
Potential income if the group facility is 5-4 could be years away, at least probably a year before any tipping fees would be available based on going through the application process and actual construction of the facility. So in the coming budget year, it would be safe to assume there would be no additional income from the group tipping fees. So that's something to consider.
Right.
Now, so paying $138,000 consulting fees, did anybody ask him about that? I mean, I mind it, but
some of what I was glancing through today appears to be that consulting on the hazardous waste handling, that it's part of that. I was looking right. I'm not sure that the chart indicates what those are, but there was a comment that I think on some of the memos that I've gone through on the consulting fees on handling of the hazardous waste and contracts with the haulers for hazardous waste and stuff like that.
So the
numbers may not explain that.
Well, it actually had two items, one under administrative for $36,500 and another under the HCW. That's
the 138. And then I believe there was a contract for review of the life cycle analysis for the group. comment that group would be paying those fees, so whether that would be included in the budget, or if that's some different item to consult. But it seemed like the engineering consultants were hired for maybe a multiple review process, not just the group, but the consultant that they used was also being hired to review the life cycle analysis for Swalco.
The smaller amounts aren't going to handle these raises as easily. And we ourselves, as a village, have found that we're sitting pretty much on the fence. We're not necessarily making money with Swalco either. So while we're trying to meet our responsibility to the green effort, this is becoming a costly procedure. So, and we're not the only community in that situation. So you're going to see both for and against. I still say we should stay with not seeing the rate or not asking for or allowing a rate. I think there are budget options for them to do. Walt was very specific about that. I think we could probably find it in the budget if you definitely say no, but we're hoping that you will, give me the opportunity to not put our money out, and I'd rather not put it out. Well, actually, just not get as much back. So would the consensus be to stay with no?
Yes.
Without Mary at this point. And would we need official board action on it, or just the direction of the board?
I think the consensus is good enough and directed. I mean, you can always make a motion to direct that too, but I don't know if you got any.
Yeah, I mean, under our rules, I'm just looking at the rule actually right now. We're not taking final action at committee of the whole. But you do have the Swalco delegate saying that she will abide by what appears to be the consensus. So I would say that although the final action would be ideal, you can't do it at this meeting anyway. Consensus would have to rule it in.
We do have time if we need to bring it to the board for approval. That's why we do.
Yeah.
Would be the end of March is when they're
meeting. So that's at the fourth player.
Would it be proper for Brandon?
I have no issues with that. I think that that's totally acceptable.
We're going to bring, invite Walter.
Exactly. We announced that Walter comes to the next meeting as well and make our minds up according to his budget answers. I would pretty much say we're still probably going to hear on no, but let's hear all of the information.
Okay, so our next meeting would be on March 4th, and 28th, that's the next Swalco. And the next Swalco board meeting is scheduled for March 28th. So we could invite Walter to the next meeting and then take action the following meeting if that's what we wanted to do.
And who wanted to make the invitation to Walter? Did you want me to? Do you want to? Do you like to?
Okay,
can
you speak up a little bit, please?
We're going to ask Swalco Director Walter Willis if he can attend our next meeting to discuss the Swalco budget and try to convince us that he needs a raise.
Thank you.
Because our consensus right now is that they do not need the raise.
Okay.
Discussion on the OMP increase. And we go on to Public Works, Facilities, Capital Access, Engineering.
Mayor and Trustees, Beth Moon is pleased to submit this engineering service agreement for your consideration. Outdoor improvement engineering services, this would be phase two, the next step for our roads. The study's been ongoing for several years, maybe a few more. It's been a challenging project. It's been a whole pending resolution of different items. now is a combination of Hart Road reconstruction, rolling in with some work that was planned for Sunset Drive in 2014. Don't know how familiar you are with the project, but one of the challenges with Hart Road was the stormwater outfall, and we evaluated a number of options, including one that takes a pipe and runs a runoff off Sunset. That's why we decided the best option really is to combine Sunset and Hart Road so that you're saving money on patching and other things that go along with it. So really what you have tonight is kind of a combination of that as we move out of the study phase and prepare for design, anticipating a mid-letting of late 2013. There is one other aspect to this project I'd like to bring to your attention, and that is it's a third project that's kind of been rolled in here as well. The fee in lieu of project for stormwater storage in Cedar Valley Park Pond, that study was really why Hart Road was on hold. We identified different options, looked at different options for an outfall for Cedar Valley Park Pond, going northwest across the high school property, you know, different routes there. And what we realized was, again, through synergy or combination of economy there, if we could run that outfall from the pond west down Hart Road, use the same pipe, make it a little bit bigger, there would be some significant savings in combining the Hart Road project with Cedar Valley Park Pond outfall. So what you have tonight, really, is the combination of those three, the design services proposal for preparing plans and specs for that. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
A little history on that, like Kurt said, we went through about 2.5 years ago with the idea that we needed an outfall going from Hart Road down to the Round Lake Drain outlet, and I challenged them to give us information that showed what would be needed for future services so that we wouldn't put a small pipe in with the Hart Road project and a few years later look at what did we need to resize to be able to serve our downtown development, how can we combine the projects and make it most cost effective for the community and beneficial in the coming years for our redevelopment. So after looking at about 4 or 5 different options, we went from probably a 24 or 30 inch pipe to probably a 36 inch pipe that will handle everything for the future and give us most of the stormwater storage that we had hopefully gained in the study that was done about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And we're also hopeful that we'll have 70% of the project paid for. So it's a win-win all the way around if that happens by combining 5 projects together.
So my question is, the budget items you have listed here, these numbers represent the combining of the budget items for all 3 projects?
Yes.
Just so everybody's aware, we do still have the obstacle of the culvert offset under the railroad versus the 134 culvert, which affects the Ace Hardwood Plaza and the flow of the waters coming from Goodnow area down 134 that won't be addressed with this project, so there's still other obstacles we need to work towards, but this gives us the outfall once the water gets to this side of the tracks.
Okay. we have what was happening with the Aces.
That culvert we're guessing is maybe a $500,000 project because you need casing boarded and pushed under the railroad, and that's what makes it so expensive.
And this project is a priority person to that one?
Hart Road has been in the design, the phase one design for 4 or 5 years now. So that was the main objective, was the reconstruction of Hart Road. We needed stormwater storage capacity for the Hart Road improvement. So looking at the overall project of what we could combine to sunset will be pavement reconstruction along with the storm sewer pipe. We're also looking at sidewalks on Sunset. Hart Road would be three-lane with sidewalk reconstruction. And the, what's the proper term, regional stormwater flood control project.
Public
flood control project. And we got $40,000 grant from SMC, Watershed Management Board, for the study that we've been working on in conjunction with this project for the public flood control project.
I believe it was $23,000 first.
Okay.
Total cost.
$40,000 expense, $23,000 grant. Yes.
Sequentially, too, I mean, if I may, it makes sense to do the improvements here on Hart Road rather than open that railroad culvert up first. If we open that railroad culvert up first, presumably a lot more water would then be flushing down toward Hart Road. And right now, the only pipe out there from Hart Road is a small stream tile that goes north under the middle school property. So if you really want to work this one first, then.
And higher impact storm events, there is water that backs up as well over Top Park Road, which then backs up the water across 134 as well. So anything we do here with relief on the outfall won't hurt that side. It leads towards helping in the future. Is we're sizing the pipe adequately to be able to handle that water in the future as well. Everybody's okay with me moving forward?
Yeah.
Good. Backflow repairs.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the board. We had an opportunity to review this committee in the whole item. I can try to summarize the little score read on the 1996 loader back of and so I won't necessarily with trying to go through this in any detail. It is a 16-year-old machine that pumped out through this with 7,500 some hours. A lot of it has been in the loading more so than the digging, but the digging piece for sure is a critical component. It's the only mechanized digging capability that we have. Water main raise is where it becomes extremely critical. And as I noted, we have spent money over the years in maintaining repair, and the amount of money in the last 2 years has gone up due to engine test gaskets
since I've been here, needing to be replaced. And prior to my arrival, the left side front suspension and front wheel drive had to be replaced. So long story short, about 2 weeks ago, the transmission started slipping. And so definitely beyond our capability to know why, definitely a concern, leading me to reach out to the Westside Tractor, the local John Deere service center. We had the loader backhoe transport center. Fortunately, not internal to the transmission, as I indicated. Problem with partially plugged external transmission filter and cracked hose contributed to the small hydraulic. While there, they did, I would hope, all our service activities do a routine inspection and express concern that the right side front drive axle suspension had definite wear in it. Since the, and here's where there is some linkage to our pursuit for a front end loader, coincidentally, not designed to have this convenient conflict, but conflict leading us to rent a front end loader that we were interested in purchasing. So I had Westside Tractor give an estimate to fix the loader backhoe front wheel, let me call it assembly. And as most of the cost was estimated in parts, $3,247. Did have discussion with the mayor and with the fear of needing the digging item backhoe. We did authorize Westside Tractor to proceed with the repair of that front side. Probably encouraging news today, the $4,700 estimate based on having to replace the hub, which, if you will, think of your passenger car, the wheel, tire wheel mounts to the hub. That hub is okay. The bearings that are supposed to hold it in place were definitely deteriorated. So the estimated total cost will be closer to something like $3,200. And so that unit is being worked on and it should be ready for pickup within a few days. Mayor, I think you wanted to add some thoughts on this. Pretty much that's my summary.
On the parts, the housing, that's the hub.
The hub is okay if the bearing, in their routine inspection, they didn't know.
We're listing as parts the housing. Is that housing the hub?
The $1,840 is the hub, yes.
Okay.
And that is okay.
And are there some other expenses that go to replacing the parts within the existing hub rather than the new hub?
The bearings.
We're going from 4,700 to 32,
correct,
which is only 1,500, but the part is 1,800. So I'm assuming there's some other associated costs. If we had the new part would not be necessary but because we're replacing this, the cost differential.
Correct.
Okay.
And please, everybody, understand the inspection where they did lift up the front end loader on their lift, excuse me, loader backhoe. You may have seen this in tire shops with a wiggle wheel, and it should be fairly tight. It was not. Which led then to the concern, led me to ask for an estimate of cost, and based on our experience working on these types of equipment, as I had a fairly detailed estimate of what they thought they would have to do.
And 2 years ago, we had the other Hummer replaced, repaired. It was after working it very hard in the snowmageddon, and it was to the point where it almost literally fell off the machine before we got it in for repairs.
That's my mistake.
We caught it here.
And obviously that caused me some fear. And while I didn't say my capital improvement vehicle equipment replacement program plans, we intend to keep this loader back on for about 3 to 4 years.
Now, I might jump ahead to the next item, kind of tying in a little bit here, just because I want to get my clarification on equipment. The front, okay, so this is, how often is this loader backhoe actually, am I speaking on that?
I'm sorry, I'm
how often do we actually use the loader backhoe? Is it just these 4 loading the salt?
It's the bucket, the loader part, and probably gotten over the years 80%+ of its use loading salt.
Okay.
Loading aggregate, loading rock, putting it in hold. I would say in my 1 year here that loaders or the backhoe part of it in some use 25% of the time.
So would this be an item that we might want to consider renting as we need it versus keeping and maintaining and doing the repairs on it and just, you know, selling this one and then just rent as we need it?
The first reaction I would give to that is we don't schedule our water main breaks.
Right.
And so having a piece of equipment to do that necessary digging to me is a critical need. Do I know that Rally Park has a loader backhoe and Rally Beach? I know that. Would we be able to borrow there in a pinch? Probably.
Now, just bear with me a moment. Now, so that's the backhoe and the loader. Now, what about the front end loader?
Okay.
What's the difference in kind of my equipment?
The backhoe loader has a 1 cubic yard bucket. And whereas the front end loader and the used piece of equipment that we have been searching for has a 3 cubic yard bucket, much greater capacity, much more horsepower, much better lifting capacity, not that that will be a major activity.
So would this one then, that front end loader, be able to basically replace the back loader with be able to do the functionality,
yes.
The same functionality, so this would not be
needed. Thank you for asking that. With a adequate size used from handle owner, the need for the 96 motor backhoe will pretty much be relegated to simply digging holes when that is needed. So I am much more confident that we will definitely be able to get that additional useful life of the 96 motor backhoe.
So do we truly need both? If the one capable of doing the other one's job?
The front end loader is not in any way, shape, or form able to dig and lift soil out. That's the backhoe piece.
And how much though, or how much digging so far this past year, how much digging did we actually have to do where that equipment was used for that purpose?
Since I've been here almost 1 year, we've used the backhoe in a mechanized digging mode 15 times.
And would that say that that cost the relative to renting it? Would that be the better option for us to rent it versus keeping and maintaining? And obviously we're talking about what's been called what it is. You said in 2017 it was programmed to be essentially to replace the backhoe. So if you come to the state and bill, it's $140,000 to replace it, up to $104,000 to replace it, and also property repairs to sell it as is, get the front end loader, and then just rent if we need a digging or potentially borrow between our other local villages.
I think the idea, Don, is at this point, the repair on the hub isn't that much. If we get the purchase of the front end loader, it reduces the wear and tear on the combination tractor. So seeing we have it in-house and paid for at this point, our best option is that we would hope it could extend the useful life to us by a couple extra years by reducing the wear and tear with the heavy labor equipment. So rather than trying to sell it and rent when we need it, it would probably make more sense to keep it. We wouldn't have additional repairs because we're not working it as hard, and that will get a longer service life out of it.
You think I would know my equipment a little better with my family's background in construction, right? But it seems to get the
75% of the use has been with the front end bucket. That's partly what worries out those front hogs on it.
Another consideration, too, is that our response time when we have a water main break, if we don't own it or don't have it, we have to take that time to either go get one elsewhere or rent one elsewhere if it's even available. And that's precious time that public workers could be out getting that set up and the water set up.
And we don't have winter or something. We currently don't have any other piece of equipment that can have wood. This should handle that effectively, efficiently, in a time span. This is our only piece of equipment, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. We would have redundancy of all of the equipment sitting there that can do the same function, the same job, and going to get used 25% of the time. Just get the function. But make sure we.
We talked about the amount that we're paying for to repair this meeting versus, let's just even say, three times that we might need to rent it. I'm not sure what the rental cost would be, but I'm assuming they're not cheap.
I'm going to say by memory, about $500 a day. About $1,500 a week,
renting by the month, $5,000, and again, that's by the end of it.
So even if we were to rent just for specific events, and let's assume that we've already used 15 times this year, so let's be really conservative and say six, we're really kind of washing out, and we still have the piece that we can still use more. So I think when you look at it that way too, the putting money into it might actually be cost effective for us.
Totally aligned with the totally supportive of a legitimate question, should we own something or should we rent it? The criticality and the frequency of use are key variables.
That's just kind of going back to that combining with the two, just because of, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My question.
Thank you.
Okay, so backhoe repairs, we're okay with that, so.
Yes.
Okay. I have approved proceeding with the repairs. We'll bring it back for bill payment once we get the final bill out, so the board is aware of what that final bill is. And then the part two of the question is the loaded purchase.
And just a brief summary. The board did authorize adopt a resolution to purchase a used front-end loader at the January 7th, January 7th committee hall, and then the regular board at a non-perceived price of $70,000. In the budget, I only wanted to draw three contentions here. With foregoing a purchase of a box van that was also approved, we had $85,000 in this fiscal year's budget. The box van and $45,000 were used. Not surprising, or should not be surprised, we aggressively look to purchase a good quality used front-end loader. We set some criteria in terms of size and capacity, recognizing we're not a construction industry or not a construction business, but wanting something that was, I would characterize as medium size, that would be able to do everything we needed, maybe in the capacity of the bucket of 3 cubic yards, other than the efficiency of loading out coal, which we've done a lot of this winter. No question, we could have gotten by say a 2 cubic yard bucket. But that was the criteria we set, believing that whatever was purchased, we were going to love and cherish for a good number of years. We looked online, we went and test drove several front-end loaders, word of mouth, talked to Burris to from time to time sell the equipment that they rent out. And one of our challenges is there's plenty of used heavy equipment out there for sale, and specifically plenty of used front-end loaders for sale. And one of the concerns I have, we not being schooled and skilled in how to evaluate a used piece of heavy equipment. While we test drove it, we asked for information about how the front end loader we looked at, we really did not know if this was that, was a good purchase or not. that took me to Westside Tractors, and as I indicated, they have two units there, comparable size. The 1999 Kawasaki needs a lot of work, and they would not estimate what that is until they actually got into it. The other unit they have was this 2004 John Deere medium-sized front-end loader that has been a rental loader its entire life. And from my perspective, it has seen a service center on a regular basis. 5,000-some hours on it from our research. On the lower end compared to a front-end loader used by construction industry, construction company, who's going to make money when that front-end loader is in use. And so the rest of the story is their asking price was $7,800. $78,000. And I had met with the vice president of the Wakanda Westside Master facility. They have come down to $74,500. The rental charges that for us having rented it because the backhoe loader's been in their shop would apply to the purchase price. So where we're at is $70,000 in capital, we owe them $4,500 whether we walk away and not purchase this loader, or we do. I have pictures, I've shared these with the mayor, with Mark, and my guys wanted to park it out front tonight so everyone could see and kick the tires, if you will.
When we're done,
as a separate expenditure, which it is, the purchase price is $74,500. I've talked with Mark, I've talked with the mayor several times, and so obviously I think it should be clear where I'd like to wind up. And please let me make this comment. Having an authorized John Deere representative close by service center, then having the history and having sold a number of these gives me greater comfort when something malfunctions. Not if all our equipment malfunctions at that time. The condition of this one, to me, gives me greater comfort that severity of malfunction and frequency of malfunction should be a lot less. And that was my fear with looking at loaders, and we looked at some that were $20,000. But like with just the one example on the backhoe loader, we will be making some needed repairs on everything we own. Be pleased to answer any questions.
Any type of warranty on the vehicle?
No.
Nothing?
It's, since we've been renting it for 3 weeks, there's a few minor things we would expect them to repair should you concur with the purchase. If I have this discussion with the Vice President, and their policy is if after you own it for 30 days, if you feel that there's truly problem or it wasn't what you needed, expected, the sale is canceled without question. There'll be questions, obviously, but that's their policy.
30 days from the day you started renting it? Or is it
30 days after inking a contract of purchase.
If at the end of the 30 days you aren't satisfied, are you charged a rental fee for that or no?
No, at least in isolation of purchase. Would they also then give us the $4,500 back in rental? My guess is no. They like us, but they don't like us that much.
Do you know if it's always been rented out of that facility?
No, it was originally shipped from John Deere manufacturer in Indianapolis, is what I'm told, to a equipment rental facility there in Indianapolis. They, Westside Tractor, purchased it in 2011. They put a new paint job on it, and we clearly have tried to look beyond the nicety of a new paint job. It has been rented by Westside Tractor since 2011. Short-term rental. I would like some guidance in direction or concurrence. Know how to see.
Well, my initial thought on it was we approved spending up to $70,000 on a machine. My concern was we needed a replacement piece of equipment while our combination tractor was being repaired. So So we were given the opportunity to use the machine for a couple of days and into the rental period to replace machine that needed work on it. So my question was, if we didn't need a machine to work with, would we be looking at a $78,000 piece of equipment, or would we continue the search for a $70,000 piece of equipment? Ron got them down from 78 initially to 75,000. I told him if we go back and get them down to 72 and we get the rental cost off of that 72, then we're probably getting a pretty good deal. So me being a person who's a little bit more aggressive on bargaining and not wanting to spend any more money than we have to, my initial feeling was we should try for a little bit more, which we haven't yet. I agree with Ron's arguments about we pretty much know what the machine is, we run it, we're fairly satisfied with it. A couple of minor things like hoses hanging down and a quick disconnect on the bucket that as soon as you catch the first whatever sticking up, you rip the hoses out, and it was shame on them for not repairing that before it got sent out on the rental, which leads me to believe what else is going on with it. That overall, we think it's a good piece of equipment. If we didn't need the tractor, would we have it sitting there today saying, boy, we love it, beautiful piece of machine, everybody's drooling it, and yeah, we should pay more for it. So that's my concern of where we're at. It sounds like the board is okay with spending the additional couple of $1,000. Our public works employees would definitely love to have a piece of equipment, and as Ron said, it could be considered as thrown in the bone when they don't get much else.
I think if there's room for negotiating, you can remove a rental fee since we're going to buy it or intend to buy it. I think that would be wonderful. Have we considered, just because we might want to, have we considered having it inspected elsewhere just to make sure? We don't have that expertise ourselves.
I have not considered that because they are an authorized dealership. I did request, and they will deliver a metal analysis, taking samples of all the fluids and confirming that there's nothing inside the transmission or the engine or the hydraulic pumping system that is problematic. That's a fairly standard analysis. They're happy to do that. They said they routinely do that on an annual basis for the equipment that they have in the rental fleet. It's been several months since they've done that test. The repairs showed everything that moves is in good condition. I'm happy to go back and with or without the mayor holding my hand and see if I can negotiate a slightly better price. I'd like to know though where the board is if I'm unsuccessful, if we're unsuccessful in getting that come down any further.
I would definitely like to see an attempt to try and get lower than that. I'm always working on a bargaining myself and getting whatever does feel possible. I would definitely like to see that those issues that you mentioned be addressed. Or
absolutely.
An agreement of a purchase contract design. It's obviously an issue, and you said putting it out on rental shape on that.
First thing that I saw was the hoses hanging there.
With that bargaining, that kind of, if there's any kind of benefit with this, we had mentioned any type of warranty that you offer.
even, you know, there's some sort of, that's what we're working.
No, what sounds like a student has, like, that you want to consider all you could do.
So there's probably a stand behind their purchase by giving the option of nullifying purchase at 30 days, so that.
I wouldn't expect much of a warranty per se on a used item that's used especially for rental equipment. I'd love to have it, but I'm seriously doubt they're going to accommodate that. The part that had me sooner, because again, it was a renter. It wasn't a renter before. It was, we purchased a car that wasn't a rental car. And guess what? We got an option to purchase an additional warranty. But they're totally bought that warranty. Our next meeting is not until a couple of weeks, and
and we're in the third week of the rental, are we returning it back to them so that we sit out and rent it out again?
Well, I think we're at the point with the consensus of Rob's instructions is to deem up for a little better deal. And it becomes to the point, he has the knowledge we need the next board meeting to actually approve the purchase, but he has a week to negotiate that to see what he can do for a better deal.
Okay, so that's focused on 1 week after that process. So put it back on the line with somebody else or rent it out something even longer. Another $1,500 or...
$1,500.
$4,500
per month.
We'll make sure that the
if we're going to purchase. That's a good point.
$4,500
a month, so we have until the second of
the
month
or so.
We're
just going to get here so late. But yeah, someone will make sure though. You're gonna rent chickens for this week. Make sure you don't rent chickens too.
Oh, we're all
good.
Okay.
Did Ryan come up there and get him tomorrow or the next day, whenever that vice president brings back in? You got the ammunition now to get it down and get to be a mate.
You add a little bit of that to your clothes and you get off to wash the windows in their building.
Number one. There's going to be a couple over there.
Thank you.
Okay, Arbor Day date.
The actual Arbor Day for years and years has been the last Friday in the month of April, the April 26th. Trustee Trefon and I have had some brief discussions. Are we going to have some type of an Arbor Day celebration this year? My sensing is we want to, and I hope that's the case. And the assumption on my part is it would be on a Saturday again. April 27th is the day after Arbor Day. If that can work for everyone, in about over 2 months away, we do need to start some efforts here in planning, organizing. So that would be my proposal. We have an Arbor Day celebration of some yet to be defined sort, and hopefully April 27th, this Saturday, can work for everyone that wants to be a part of it.
Nothing to budget for our Arbor Day.
Nothing.
Zero dollars.
So we're into the foundation. I'm going to take board. Trustee Trefon and I developed it last time. But I think, especially on the committee, I think we're going to have to work out with this legislation. If we're not going to be lucky.
Okay. Start with 427, is there anything with
that? So Vicki, when do you want to have a meeting, especially that time?
I think
we're willing to invite you to attend.
We need the public statement.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. We'll need to publish the special meeting for special events that everybody can be about. Where when we had committee meetings, we had a regular schedule that we could follow and anybody could attend that wanted to and participate.
The event is part of the disability.
We could do that.
So we attend that first and then we seem to work and we can go out and find out.
So March 4th, bring it up for discussion again.
Okay. March 4th?
Yep. I think Vicki, you and I probably need sooner than that ourselves. What's the plan? You're solid plan.
What would you like to make, Jim?
Just set that up.
Okay. All right, so now will that be 2 months bringing Walter in, or are we okay to talk about that for?
It's going to be a long meeting.
11 o'clock is putting our deadline in fast.
All right, good enough.
The goal is not to extend the meeting too much.
I know.
By any means. Okay, that takes care of everything up to the group transfer station update. Is there anything that switching around we've missed? Nope. Okay, group transfer station update. Now, before I forget, I would like to ask our representatives to make sure that I'm remembering correctly. At the November SWALCO meeting, there was an executive session. And the board came out of the executive session, and I believe there was a motion and a second and a vote on action once the board was back in public session. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay, the minutes that were presented at the January meeting, the board came out of executive session, announced the next board meeting was January 24th, and then there was a motion to adjourn. Came in as the meeting was getting started on the 24th. Was there any correction to the minutes that you recall?
There we go.
Okay. I called Walter Willis today to ask about that. He seemed to remember that there was a vote, and I believe it was to not support the Groot application if it was made at that time because they hadn't met the requirements of the SWALCO siting. Okay. So I asked them to look into that so that we could get the minutes corrected and make sure the public is aware of what actually went on at that meeting. A little disappointing that nobody on the board caught that. But there were 32 people there that didn't mention it, so.
November meeting on January 24th.
Okay. Pardon?
January
24th? It was in SWALCO. I'm just trying to make sure that their information gets published correctly.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We passed out, we did the CTY questionnaire call, and we passed out the color sheet with the results from that.
Where did they pull the phone numbers?
From our overall Round Lake CPY database?
Yeah, they go through and search the public phone database.
Does
trustees
number not in there?
Where did CPY get the numbers? Remember?
Anything is possible. Do you have a hardwired home line?
Where they get the numbers?
Because that. There were two messages. There was one with the actual questions. There was a second message for answering machine. There was no live response for somebody to respond to the questionnaire. So that's part of the data of X number of calls were made, X number of calls were picked up, and then the number of actual respondents to the questionnaire.
And I'm question where the owner, especially the state society, so many
there are people
are not using a hard line, they're using their cell phone, and this is also our means for notification.
And that's the challenge, to try to get that information so we can contact everybody that we're trying to.
And anybody can go on the website and enroll if they can enter any specific information they want. And that's the channel we try to inform them. We told them in years past on water bills, for example.
Do we have that on our website too that you can?
Yeah, on our website. That's
I
like that.
It's an education thing. You try and you get something and you don't get something.
Right.
Any suggestions on what may work better? Get people involved, they're welcome.
Right. Yeah, I'm asking this
because
of the hard
line. I didn't get the question here, but I did get the other question.
Right. And that's the way it's designed. If it's not a live pickup, then somebody wouldn't be there to respond. So in the follow-ups, we've tried to add, if you want to give comments, go to the website, call the village, whatever. So we're trying to get the information out that, you know, anybody that hears about it, please send the feedback on.
I get my CCB on my home phone and my cell phone, as well as email. And I've never gotten a questionnaire on any of them.
If you didn't answer, it would be a voicemail message only.
My cell phone is my house phone, but my answer is contact shop with all the girls. And the questionnaire never came up.
And we know it's not a perfect system, so it wouldn't be surprising that some of them call that you go through to be able to, even though somebody picked up the phone, maybe it didn't go to your house. And I don't know if we have the tracking capability to try to search that out or not. But when we're made aware that somebody isn't getting it, we try to follow up and get them added if we can.
I got the message at home and then the survey. I didn't answer my phone, but I did answer it on my cell phone.
So we have the four questions, and they were press one if you think the waste transfer facility should be built, press two if you think the waste transfer facility should not be built, press three if you don't know if it should be built, or four if you need more information about the facility to make the decision. And the top graph shows we had 101 should be built, 191 should not be built, 62 don't know, and 132 need more information.
So when this was before the meeting, or?
Yes, on the 11th at 6 o'clock. I think based on the 486 respondents, we were kind of disappointed in the turnout Saturday morning. We don't have a count for how many people showed up, but I'm pretty sure we didn't have a couple hundred show up at it. The intention was to do a similar follow-up questionnaire, hoping that many more people would have attended the informational presentation to see if we could track any change in opinion. That were people less objectionable to it, more objectionable to it. So based on the low turnout, I don't know that that would be beneficial, but we did leave a message that we had intended to do a follow-up questionnaire. So we need feedback. Do we want to try to do another questionnaire, or would it not give us significant data?
There's no chart. Yeah, we have the annual fee we use as often.
We did have one or two people suggest that maybe we should do a mailing because not everybody has a hard line that we would get the CTY call to. So are there other avenues where we could try to contact people to get their input on it?
We put in a postcard stock with the water bill and everybody responded, it'd be about $900.
Wow. point, we've been sitting on a little too big because you only get the one too big for anything in that world.
You need to do, if it's on the bills, you need to do a postcard style return with a permanent plan.
Yeah, if you want to provide the opportunity for them to mail it back without a cost, otherwise it costs more to do it.
What if we were to ask them to return it via email or
phone? You can still put that on there as an option too, though. The most cost-effective way to put a self-addressed stamp envelope in was a card stock. It costs more to put a self-addressed stamp envelope in there with a full-size sheet of paper. But if you didn't want to do a self-addressed stamp envelope, then it would be less than $2,000. But the best way to guarantee a response is, you don't have to pay for it.
The downside is the percentage of people that actually respond to those prepaid responding to a small percentage, so, but.
Okay, so that's completely not the thing that you can't put it in there, even if another local paper, and when they go and they bring us their water bill, or they mail in their water bill, they still can't put that in the same envelope.
Not everybody mails their water bills in. We have online payments, we have auto pay, things of that nature. So separate the two issues entirely. This is a survey, the other water bills, that was. Yes, you could do that. But we still don't have everybody mailing.
Well, they pay postage if you mail in it anyway, you're already paying postage regardless. And now's your chance to get a little bit of input when you can't make it to another meeting. Now, autopay does it give them an email saying, hey, this, I'm not meant for autopay, so if you give them any type of notification, mm-hmm. or we send anything to them with that.
Yeah, you get a bill. You still get a paper bill.
That's correct, yes.
We could just put something, how much. How many lines do we have?
Can I just correct one thing, though, too? Think of it. We don't, the mailings don't go to us, right? Or do they do, they all do that, right? Yeah, okay, never mind. It used to be that they went to the Dropbox.
Even if there's a postcard, we think of that a lot of people could actually put in the return envelope to the village. So we don't get that postage charge. We're going to throw it in with the water bill for it.
If we didn't put return postage, just a separate sheet, like Dawn is saying, cost on that?
A couple hundred bucks to get the additional enclosure into the water.
Okay, so that might be an economical option to try.
Especially if you want to get your feedback from the voice heard, at least it's still.
And actually, considering that we only had 1,375 live deliveries and we got 458 responses, that's a 35% return. That's not bad.
Right. That,
I mean, you can,
that was fairly impressive that we got that response, and if we had more live pickups, we might have gotten more, but right. We could try different times and things, but if we do too many more, then people get upset while you call them all the time. So it's balancing it. So we could do another CTY questionnaire and formulate some different questions if that makes sense, but that's what we're looking for, direction on contacting people. What does everybody think will work or not work?
Yeah, we have to hit the icon and leave their feedback. Yeah, the only way that we have the capability, we haven't talked to anybody that can do it yet, but we don't have the capability internally. We would have to consult with somebody if they wanted to. If we wanted to put a survey online and say, click here, bang, bang, bang. We don't have the little PDF capability, and we don't have a way to put it on the website. So currently what we have, the only way you can provide feedback on the website is click here, and then it'll email, it'll call up your web browser, send an email to the admin department at umountlake.com. We have had two responses to that since we put it on the website. Well, we've seen questions about it and not in favor of it, but that's how it's handled. So we could make it survey-wise, but we'd have to explore how to do that. We don't have that capability.
So we could do it a paragraph. Like you're saying, similar to what we have, though, and could we do it to
click here, which leads them to doing the email.
We could set up other email accounts to do that, so yeah, that's what we're thinking
to,
of.
Yeah. And give them enough information to leave your comments.
But it still looks like an email when you get that's. That was the other thought.
Compiling answers.
Here again.
A spreadsheet that would compile the answers for
yes.
us.
It would still come up as an email, though, and it's not a, you know, your vote has been submitted.
Right. So the only other problem with this that we need to anticipate is that if somebody goes to the website and they've already answered on the phone line, you're going to skew your results again. So, you know, I think we need to denote in this email that, you know, if you respond in some other fashion, not to do it again, or we have to have either a phone number or something in which we can say, oh, we have to do it. How would we address that?
What if we then in turn?
See, with CTY, we get a spreadsheet where we could sort and compare to the same people respond if they did so.
The one that's a good point, we do get that information, but a lot of the phones come up as unregistered and don't have a phone number.
Okay.
So there was maybe a couple dozen, I don't even like to give a number, so I'm not sure. But very limited amount of number compared to the respondents as restricted. So they can call if they have a landline, but who it is and the number is restricted. So we don't even know who responds to that.
So
still difficult to get a good comparison other than are we getting any change from what the first response was.
Yeah, only did it the same way you could assume that.
Okay, another option. Sticking with the actually 35% is still a good return for a survey. What if instead of sending the piece inside your mail as a separate survey for those who send the act, just put in a little blurb. Say, please go online, update your contact information. We're conducting a survey in the next couple of weeks, and you can be called if you want to be able to provide it as a feedback. Make sure your contact information makes it update so that we can go ahead and reach you for a quick, well, how long was the survey? 5 minutes, maybe, and even that, because I'll just want those four questions on your list. For a quick 4 minute survey, there are so many people who do not want their government at any level to know that's my phone number. And I'm afraid that you're going to get people who are just not going to do it simply for that. So you're still going to skew. I just don't know how to handle it. Are you going to skew
it? I'm going to better information.
Okay.
I'd like to call time out on this. I mean, we're talking so much about mechanics. Can we focus on what we would do with the results?
Thank
so
you.
We have some results here. What are we going to do with them?
What can we do?
What is the next step? Number one, my personal feeling on where we're at with Swalco. The November meeting, Swalco took a vote based on the group had not met all of the requirements to file their application. The vote was not to support an application or the waste transfer stations should it be made by group back in November. And I don't recall whether the motion that was voted on included, but as I recall, there was discussion that Swalco should continue negotiations with group on coming to a host agreement that was acceptable to Swalco and group, and the second part of it was also Lake County needs their own host agreement outside of the Swalco organization as well. So if I'm remembering correctly, the direction was that they would continue to negotiate in hopes of coming to agreement on a tipping fee that was acceptable to Swalco. That would be part of the host agreement. At the January meeting, Walter Willis suggested that the negotiations weren't going fairly well. they were hopeful that they would come to an amicable agreement on the host agreement and the fees that would be paid through the host agreement. The life cycle analysis was the other step that needed to be met, and Walter suggested that if those two items were, the life cycle analysis was acceptable, that it showed that the facilities made sense through the life cycle analysis, and that the host agreement was negotiated, that he would ask the Swalco board to vote for approval of the host agreement at the March meeting. I made comment asking if Swalco intended to give the municipal representatives time to discuss it with their boards and how individual boards would like their representatives to vote at the Swalco meeting. So, gut feeling is transfer stations are part of the Lake County Solid Waste Agency's facilities that we will at some point, even if we don't particularly need them now, need transfer facilities in Lake County because we're running out of landfill space. And when we do, and we can't site any more landfills in Lake County, then we need to transfer it someplace. So we need to do that. The fact that Swalco has gone ahead and said we're going to continue negotiating for a host agreement that we like, that tells me if they get one and the life cycle analysis is positive, then Swalco is going to support the facility in Round Lake Park. So where are our representatives and what's the board feeling on how are we going to represent our residents? What are their expectations, and are we going to tell Swalco we don't think you should be suggesting that this is the proper location for the site? And if that's the case, then why haven't we done that already when they went on and said we're going to work on negotiating the host agreement so that we can move it forward?
Well, I think everybody pretty much knows that I'm certainly not in favor of this, and there are many people on that board at this current time who are not in favor of this. So I think there's going to be quite a lively debate when that issue comes up. I'm quite certain it's going to be voted down, but nonetheless, it hasn't come up for the actual vote. The host agreement is part of it. And I think as that comes up, this is a question that this board does have to decide. You know, what do we as a village want to do for our residents, for or against this?
So is it in the hands, I can't ever say it correctly, is it in their hands right now? I mean, if they say no, where does it go?
If they say no to this transfer station, Swalco actually does believe that we, as the mayor said, we do need a transfer station. The question throughout a lot of the board members is this the best location? And that certainly seems to be the very lively debate. I think a lot of people were looking to see where this was going to go within a time frame, but just how vehemently or quickly the host agreement moves forward. Host agreement still, from what I've heard anyway, is still not in the bag, if you will. No pun intended. So this is really, this is going to be a hard one for us to anticipate when to or when not to. This board has always said we wanted to hear the information and we wanted to see what this was actually going to be about before we made decisions. And certainly there's been the opportunity to do that now, including this past Saturday. So I think our time has come, and I think this is, you know, what our mayor is saying, we need to start thinking about what our position is and where are we going to move with it as a board.
Okay, so let's say it's voted, who's possible. What else can we do after that? Like Donnie said there, the other day said, there are ways we can sell, and how can we, if the approvals are all there, and it's in Round Lake Park, what and how can we sell as a village of Round Lake?
what options do we have?
Possibly a lot.
And that is using
the people at
Dunbar.
I'm sorry, what? It'd be done by the people of Down Lake, it could be done by the village, it could be done by
an individual resident.
Right.
And I'm sure you've never been through it before, but I mean, what is their chance of winning a case like that? Or a village, for that matter? Where would we stand on something like that? How many dollars would it cost to either get ahead of the game or not get anywhere with it? And I guess we don't know. We probably don't know. But where would we, you know, where would we have more?
Our dollars could give us some direction.
Well, I think as far as the process and as you walk through the decision, what I would first recommend is whether the village board is for or against it before we really talk litigation strategy, because the litigation strategy and cost, I don't know that that drives whether this board is for it or not. It really, that drives whether you will spend money to oppose it. So that's the first step, and then if your desire is to really dig deep into what it would cost to oppose this thing at the village, then we need to determine whether litigation is probable, and then if it is, then we go in there and talk straight up.
Okay, as far as the process, it requires the applicant to actually file an application. Prior to filing the application, they need to negotiate host agreements. You have a host community, SWALCO, and Lake County Board. And those processes have been started. Another requirement is the life cycle analysis of the proposed facility. The life cycle analysis study is posted on the SWALCO website. There's a meeting scheduled for March 6th. Round Lake Beach Civic Center, and the host community for that meeting, as I understand it, is the Village of Round Lake Park. If that life cycle analysis is shown to be favorable, then the next step, again, similar to what was done back in November, is to file the intent to file. That has to be filed before the actual application gets filed. Then the official filing of the application, and once the application is filed, there's a timetable for when the public hearing has to be held by the host community, and it has to be completed within 90 days?
No, I think it's 90 to 120. No sooner,
than 90 has to be completed in 120. At the public hearing held by the host community, which in this case would be Round Lake Park, they hear testimony from supporters and opponents. There would be a recommendation to approve or to deny, and based on the outcome of that, then you would get into court challenges by any interested party.
Can I just explain a little bit?
Yes.
In that hearing, the 90 to 120 days, though, that's where anybody that was interested in opposing would want to be, you know, would want to participate, though, because that's where you would have to call in all your experts to beat the application. You'd have to get your appraisers in there. You'd have to get the experts on garbage that would say, you know, life cycle analysis was faulty. Whatever, they don't need it for whatever reason. Then you'd also have to get, you know, probably somebody with some legal expertise in how that process works on the actual citing, the hearing process. Because EPA is probably going to, you know, it's not going to the runner, but as far as EPA is concerned. So unless you have specific evidence that says, no way, in the hearing process, something's clearly faulty, EPA is going to lean towards the end. That's just the way the game is played in that regard. But even before litigation, you need somebody involved that knows the process that can fight the application up front if you want to go to that level, but it takes a lot of resources to get somebody involved to go represent at the hearing and as that expertise. So.
If the board so chose to go that direction, that would not be part of the litigation.
Correct. You could still...
So that would not be a subject for executive session.
I mean, unless...
Well, we kind of have to talk about that. Because it does involve... It does involve getting us involved in this process on a level that is... And it can really be contested in front of another board. So... I don't necessarily feel we have a better idea of what we want to do.
An indication of what things we can discuss in that and where we should be doing it.
That's all things for Tacoma.
Comments that we heard, I think the number one concern is the evaluation of properties based on the site. So Mark's comment about getting appraisals that would give evidence that citing that here with the properties would be the type of defense number one that comment that we've heard from our residents that they would probably be concerned with. So
that's one thing they have to show as part of that EPA application process is that that's not adversely impacted. The traffic's been addressed. That was another thing they mentioned before, but those type of things.
So regardless if you go to the basic, these are our objections. There's still going to be quite an expensive amount in that to consider. So,
first step is for us to have the board
come up with a position. I think the thing to keep in mind that everybody has said, and Slavko said it back in November, once the clock starts ticking, you don't want to be behind the game. Slavko had the opinion that the clock started and the game started in 90 days. We should have started a couple of months prior, so we were ready to be prepared for our defenses on it. So that's something to think about. Bottom line is we got a bunch of residents that want to know where to go at.
So we can take a vote.
Okay. No opposed. I mean, basically when I hear from the residents, I haven't heard any residents advocate for it.
So we actually had 101 say it should be built, and 191 say it should not be, and 184 don't know or need more information. So yes, we have heard both arguments.
Everything they want to do, and the park wants to do it, there's a benefit in it for the park. Where do we see it? cost of upset residents, I understand that, but then where's the dollars going to?
But saying having a position on it doesn't tie you to pursuing a lawsuit.
Oh, absolutely.
Would I have to think that we're going to spend a lot of money to oppose it? Hopefully not, given what I know.
We don't know that you don't think that's going to happen. I mean, are we being completely told what could happen, or is it just being among select people?
Well, it's based on the fact that my personal opinion is I don't think we would win the lawsuit, but that doesn't mean I'm not opposed to it. I'm opposed to it. Period.
I mean, that's the bill that's proposed the lawsuit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I understand that.
I've had conversations with both sides, some of those 101 that responded in favor, and some of the 191 that are opposed, and both have points. There's pros and cons each side, but obviously, I was going to say what's going to be better good for residents and the health and safety of everybody, and right now I'm still completely undecided. What's the impact to the village if we don't oppose this and then we see environmental issues that impact our residents and our residential homes, our schools, and we haven't opposed it? What's the impact back onto us as the village?
Has anybody presented to anybody the results that have been happening behind you?
The Glenview is on River Road in Central. It's actually off of River Road north of Central. That's the Swank facility, which is operated by Group, is what we were told. General perception, if you drive past it, is that no, it's not near homes. There is a youth facility to the west across the street. The buildings are somewhat set back from River Road, so you don't get the perception of somebody impacted is right there. Mark pulled up on the aerial that there is actually residential quite close to the northwest of the site. But driving down River Road, it's not apparent because of the location. To the east, you've got the river and then a closed landfill on the other side of the river. There's one in Crystal Lake on Virginia Street that was mentioned Saturday. I've been through Crystal Lake and haven't seen it, so other than being aware now that it's there where I can go look for it, that one I don't know. Other areas, I haven't heard comments on where they're at other than maybe Chicago or any ones that aren't kept as clean as the new facilities that you're talking about. Mike, you got comments?
It's on our side, but I asked the board to take these two considerations to make a decision. Number one, does the board formally even have to make a decision? I don't think we do. Or the board doesn't matter. I don't think that's any part of the process. Besides potentially the SWALCO vote on a host agreement does not necessarily support the facility. I don't know if the board needs to actually take a position. Because number two is, I think if the board takes a position, even to what Trustee Clement said, the residents are going to want the board because the government wants a big deep pocket to stop it on their behalf. Is where the residents are going to come back to you, and residents that I'm talking to. The question is the board closed with this? The question is, how is the board going to stop this? That's the question. So the board can sit up there all day. We don't like this, that's fine. But what's the question being asked by the residents is, how is the board going to stop this? That's the question in front of you, which you talk through your options of how is the board going to stop this. And it seems that the board would have to get consultants in line for the question and answer session if they're going to be opposed to it and work to stop it, and then potentially move itself down to litigation if that's where it needs to go. So I think that's just some things to consider from a resident's perspective, asking the board to consider before you make a decision.
I would agree. I've heard people make that comment too. Like, what are you going to do to stop this?
Well, we can ask them how much. If it gets to that point, we can say we oppose it, and if it costs us a certain amount of money estimated to stop it, is that money that you want us to spend? Could you have a survey?
This is the biggest problem, the property values. They're afraid the property values are going to go down.
That's what I'm hearing.
From what I understood, what they did over in that subdivision just east of the dump there is they froze their property values at a certain level, isn't that correct? In other words, they got appraisals done, whatever year it was, and then their property values wouldn't change.
Next, the countryside landfill is what you're talking about.
Yeah, right. Sorry, wouldn't they do the same thing here if there's, they won't?
No, I about that. They don't do that for this kind of facility. For landfills, they do that. They've actually, in some cases, made agreements to pay full price when someone goes to sell their home after a certain period. But the guy said that for the transfer station, they generally don't do that.
How far away from the transfer station is our nearest home?
Part of the siting application is it can't be within 1,000 feet of residential zoning. Our village residences are.
I'm sorry.
Our closest residents are probably 1,600-1,800 feet, maybe more, but they're well outside 1,000-foot radius.
Next question: has anybody ever been to a transfer station? Any of the trustees? How do we know there is an impact?
I did ask Saturday if there might be opportunities to tour the station, so that information was being taken back to group representatives to see what might be available, and I asked if tours were available, what number of people might it be limited to, so we're trying to get that information to see if that can be done as well.
Thank you.
So, Mayor, what do you stand on? Are you in favor of it or against?
I understand the position of the possibility of decreased property values, and that's a major concern for people. And that's a concern to me. And part of it is you have people saying, well, I've got a study that shows that it does decrease property values. You've got other people saying, well, I've got a study that shows it doesn't decrease it. And unfortunately, I think until the facility is built, you don't really have the answer to that. So that's the hard part to try to figure out. As far as how the facilities operate, I think they're probably not as bad as what people's perceptions are. But as far as proximity to homes, that's a hard question. And I'm still trying to get more information, and that's one of the reasons I asked about touring the facilities to get a better feeling for it.
Any of those questions on Saturday, whether you were in favor or not in favor of the facility?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. How's your response, anyway?
I'm still trying to gather information. And I fully understand the concern of our residents that are closer.
Can I say one more thing, Jim?
Yes.
I think if the board members make a decision on this without getting all the information, they're doing a disservice to the residents of this village. And Don Gubier is trying to put you on the spot right now.
and you don't have all the information. He doesn't have the information, but he's trying to win an election.
We have a lot of information.
Well, I can tell you, Don, that I've been to almost every board meeting, and I haven't heard you or Sue give any information on any of this, including the increase that you voted yes on for Swalco. So, why don't we quit playing the games and let's do things for the board, not for yourself.
Questions rest in there.
Well, I have a question to speak.
And we don't want to make this meeting controversial tonight.
Well, I'm not trying to, but I come here to get free information, Jim. I come to almost all these board meetings, and I don't hear the things that I'm supposed to be hearing until it's time for an election. And that's what I see. That's my opinion.
Thank you.
suggested new topics.
Yes. I just find the annual meeting for the Lake Management Commission that we're all invited to. We are the only community that has not passed a phosphorus ordinance, so we're going to be giving some, let's knock out of a red, conservation staff ordinance that the other villages have passed for our consideration. They would like us to pass that. I could also have a representative from the Lake Management and our representative who comes for their explanation of why we need to do it, if you'd like to have that one. I would like to have some kind of ordinance passed for my votes.
Okay. Put that on the agenda to discuss. You have the sample ordinance?
Yeah, sure. I thought you got a copy. Mark got a copy.
I might have gotten it.
Okay. So it's me with Mark.
Then most likely I have it. Just
I will forward it. And
look at it in detail.
Just three samples.
We have all speakers that are going to have a discussion. So if you look at that, you kind of decide about the next one. Yes, but we still have the speaker to get the information as to why it's important.
I'm still supporting on giving the information to Mark and that's the order of the
conference. And we can get copies forwarded to everybody so they have time to.
Well, there's three, so if I turn to look at them together for one, then we can test.
But in the meantime, everyone at their leisure can do it.
Yeah.
Anything else?
So, question. We, in our packets, we received the Farrington Area Council of Governments form along with the Lake Council Police discussion of 2013 legislative initiatives.
Yes, the mayor spoke about that at the last meeting, and I said I'd forward you guys all the information. That was just stuff out of your mail, in your mailbox. I forwarded it in the email, but then gave you the hard copy.
Anything else? Motion for adjournment? Take a minute. Clemens, my Samuel, my Clemens, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried.